Okay, well, I would like to thank Martin for inviting me to present our work. It's a great pleasure. This study is actually part of a larger national project that Martin is actually leading, where we're looking at the effect of agricultural practices on the N and the C cycles in different different region of Canada, and those regions also, and this is particularly over winter, and we're looking also at different kind of winter across the country. This particular study is actually also focusing on the effect of agricultural practices on denitrifier and communities over winter. So I don't think I need to convince you that nitrous oxide production is really important in over winter, so I'm going to skip that one. Of course, agricultural management practices can lead to change in organic carbon and nitrogen, and that can influence the nitrous oxide emissions over winter. Claudia has done an excellent job in describing that actually some agricultural management practices do have an influence on the amount of nitrous oxide emission that we're having over winter. So, for example, tillage, crop residue, and best management practices when compared to conventional management practices have shown to be, you know, to reduce nitrous oxide emission during winter. However, some other studies have shown that there was no change if you had no change in winter nitrous oxide emission between different tillage regime or fertilization. So it shows that there are some factors that we still have to work on understanding how agricultural management practices influence nitrous oxide emission during winter. Now, as for information on how agricultural management practices influence denitrifier and nitrifier communities over winter, there is very few studies that have done that. For example, the only one I could find is a one macrocosm study where they've looked at one freeze-thaw cycle and they've observed a decrease in the abundance of denitrifier and nitrifier, but only in soil that was supplemented with a mix of residues, but not with the wheat residues. There's also the study of that Claudia has described with Kerry Dunsfield. And they have looked at the effect of tillage on the denitrifier and nitrifier, and what they have observed is that there was seasonal change. That was the seasonal change was the greatest factor that was influencing the communities, the diversity of the communities, and tillage did have an effect on the communities, but only in certain period. So the focus of this project was to evaluate the effect of agricultural management practices on denitrifier community abundance, denitrification, and nitrous oxide emission during winter in eastern Canada. And we actually had two different sites. The site in Fredericton was looking at the effect of crop residue. We've picked barley as a crop residue because this is one of the main crop rotation in potato, and potato is very important crop in New Brunswick. And we've also chosen the red clover because it has a very very different availability of a carmine. In the Saint-Augustine Quebec site, which is actually the site that Martin Chantigny is also using, we're looking at the different end sources, poultry manure, dairy cattle manure, and mineral fertilizer. So we had a random block design with three or four replicates. We actually went five times over the winter from November to April. We sample at a depth of 0 to 7 centimeters, and we had a composite sample of 6 cores for our experimentation. So to measure nitrous oxide emission, respiration, and denitrification, we carefully packed the soil in jars, brought those jars inside, and then incubated at the temperature we found at the 5 centimeter depth. And we had two sets of jars, one set that we use for to quantify nitrous oxides and respiration, and the second set where we actually quantify denitrification using the acid tillage blockage method. For the abundance of denitrifier, we go in the soil and use liquid nitrogen to flash freeze because we're also thinking of doing the gene expression on this. We did the extraction of DNA, quantitative PCR, and then we've obtained then the number of denitrifier. We've targeted the two nitrite reductase gene near S and near K because they actually capture two different communities. Normally, denitrifier have either one or the other. And we also have quantified a nitrous oxide reductase gene, and that one has only one form. So the Fredericton site, the fertilizer for the barley was applied pre-plant at 60 kilogram N per hectare. And the barley was planted in May, was harvested in September, and then the straw was mulched and plowed down in October. The red clover was also planted in May, but there was no fertilization and was also plowed down on October. So if you look at the cell temperature and snow depth, we actually had a very strange winter in 2009. We actually have all the snow in December, and then magically it all disappeared in January or almost all. And that's very unusual because normally if we can start wearing shoes and leave the winter boot in April, we're really happy. So it was warmer than usual. As for temperature, you can see that the temperature is dropping, and then as soon as we have the snow, then it stabilized and stays close to zero. Once we lost most of the snow, we had actually a freezing, a more deeper freeze, and then after that, the temperature went up again. In terms of, we've measured nitrate and ammonium concentration. The nitrate concentration was actually modest, but there was a significant increase over time. And there was no change, there was no difference between treatment. For ammonium, ammonium concentration remained really low in the system and there was no significant change. For nitrous oxide emissions on this particular date, we have actually one peak of the greatest emissions that we had were actually in February. It seems that we've missed actually the burst of nitrous oxide in April. So the emissions, and there was, again, no significant difference between cells that were planted with red clover or barley. Same thing for denitrification, no difference between treatments. The emissions are about 100 milligram N per hectare per day. And so if you look, the emission actually, about 50% of the emissions that we had in February were actually at N2O. For respiration, we also have no significant change between treatments, and we again have the greatest respiration in February. So it was a bit surprising because we, you know, like it's been reported in the literature that there is also bursts of N2O during when soils were frozen. So what I did is actually took a closer look at the conditions at the in the February at the date we sampled just to see what was going on. So the arrow here is actually when we sample. You can see in purple and green that the temperature was actually going down, but we're very close to the zero mark. But what I think what is going on, so it doesn't seem to be thawing by an increase of temperature of the soil, but what is happening is here you can see in blue and red, the water content spiked just prior the date where we went. And actually, if you look, we actually lost almost all of our snow at that time. And so, and then we have a second peak where we lost more snow. So it seems to indicate that the burst of nitrous oxide emission could be linked to actually an increase of water in soil. So basically more anoxic conditions and more water for the organism to be active. In the St. Augustine sites, the manure and the mineral fertilizer was applied at 90 kilogram of available N per hectare. The manure were applied in the spring and then incorporated on the same day. And the mineral N was applied as ammonium nitrate and broadcasted. And the crop was wheat and was planted in May and harvested in August. In Quebec, they're so lucky. They have lots of snow and they keep it for a long time. And you can see also that that has an effect. As soon as the snow comes, the temperature stabilizes and actually kind of increase. And after that, you have like the huge freeze cycle that leads to a burst of N2O. For nitrate, again, a modest amount of nitrate in the system, about 6 milligram N per kilogram of soil. There was significant difference over time. There was a slightly less nitrate in January and in March. Ammonium was a bit surprising. We actually have an increase over time from about 2 milligram to 15 milligram per kilogram of soil, and that seems to suggest that we actually have mineralization under cold conditions and that nitrification was not removing the ammonium from the system. And I should say that there was no difference between treatments again, just over time. So nitrous oxide emission, very similar pattern as we saw in Fredericton, except maybe in March we had a bit more, but it was not significantly different from the other dates. Same pattern, again, no difference in treatments. And denitrification was also the highest in January and March. And when we look, we have about 40 milligram, and that's about the same for denitrification, so 40 milligram N per hectare per day. So most of the emissions actually from Quebec are as N2O. Respiration, a bit different. We actually have significantly higher respiration from January to April compared to November and December sampling dates, but there was no significant difference again for treatment. So I'm seeming to miss a slide, so I'm just going to explain. I've also looked at in the Quebec site to see if it was a similar situation where we actually have a snow melt occurring at the date where we went, so in the January date. In the Quebec, it's a different story. The snow actually remains pretty much the same. It was 25 to 30 centimeters of snow at that date. However, if you looked at the temperature, we actually had an increase of temperature in that particular period from minus 2 to minus 0.5, if my memory is correct. So it looks like actually it's again controlled. It suggests it's again controlled by the water contents of soil, because basically we would get an increase of temperature, we would get more free water. And now if we turn to the abundance of the denitrifier group, then the story is completely different. There are some differences in treatments, and there's actually no difference over time. So here we have a significant interaction between time and treatment, and this is especially for the November and the January dates, and there's significantly more NOSET genes, copies per nanogram of DNA and per gram of soil, in the dairy cattle manure, in soils that have received dairy cattle manure compared to poultry manure or mineral fertilizer treated soils. And if you look also at the average, if we average the values for over time for each of the treatments, there's actually also more NOSET gene denitrifiers in the dairy cattle manure compared to the poultry manure and the mineral fertilizer treated soils. For the NOSAM, a similar story, except we have only one day that is significantly different in terms of for the treatments, significantly more near S denitrifiers in soil treated with poultry and dairy cattle, and about a threefold decrease in the mineral fertilizer treated soils. So the NOSET was also like this. We have a difference in mineral. The mineral fertilizer soil is also low, and the near S also. And if you look, the near S also responds very similarly to NOSET in terms of having more near S denitrifiers in soil that are treated with dairy cattle manure compared to soils treated with poultry manure and mineral fertilizer. For the near K, it's a slightly different story. Near K has a tendency to react differently from the near S and NOSZEN. It's also been shown in the literature to be more responsive to changes, so it seems to be kind of always wanting to do its own thing. In this particular case, the near K is actually more abundant in a poultry manure treated soil than it is compared to the two other treatments. But there are also a significant interaction time and treatment, and in November and March. In November, again, the mineral fertilizer treated soil is actually, the abundance is low compared to the two other treatments. And in March, it's actually in the poultry manure that we're having more of near K identify and compare to dairy cattle manure and mineral fertilizer soil. So there seems to be something going on with the mineral fertilizer, and I think what's going on is that there's actually, since we're not bringing carbon to the soil, we're actually having the communities decreasing over the in November because there's no more plants, there's no more residue, and so we're getting lower amount, and then after that, I think they're bouncing back because of the freeze-thaw cycles where it would bring more carbon to the system. Oh, here's my slide. Okay, so in conclusion, the greatest denitrification and nitrous oxide emission, nitrous oxide and respiration rates that we've observed in this study were at the moment where soil were frozen. There was no effect of the agricultural practices on denitrification, nitrous oxide and respiration at the date we used in the study. There was significantly more near S and NOS gene denitrifier in soil treated with dairy cattle manure compared to soil treated with poultry manure or mineral fertilizer. However, for near K, there was significantly more of these type of denitrifier in poultry manure compared to the other two treatments. So what it all boils down is that basically what controls the nitrous oxide emission and denitrification is completely different than what control the communities. So for nitrous oxide emissions and denitrification, the factor is controlled by a difference in soil conditions over time. As for the denitrifying communities, what is really controlling the communities is the type and the source of carbon that is brought by the manure. So I would like to acknowledge the people who have worked on the project, so Enrico Tetti and Sophie Veth, two PDF, Jan Zhang, Janet Decker, and Joanne Tremblay, the technicians. I would like to also acknowledge my collaborators who are really essential for this study, Martin Chantigny at CAFC, well, I don't really need to explain that, Bernie Zibart at Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in New Brunswick, Dave Burton in Nova Scotia Agricultural College in Nova Scotia, and Martin Fillon from the Université de Moncton in New Brunswick. And I would like to thank you for your attention.
Did these studies a long time ago, and if you increase microbial biomass, say by putting carbon or manure on, denitrification potential went up just as a general overall microbial biomass increase. And might that be happening, so you add manure, you might have more microbial biomass, and the community might just be responding along with, the denitrifiers might be responding along with the rest of the community, which might be why you see that treatment effect. So do you have total microbial biomass data?
We did. Although I don't think I can remember what they were, but if my memory is correct, there was no big change over time for MBC.
How about with treatment?
For treatments, no. Yeah.
Did the carbon input differ in mass between the poultry litter treatment and the dairy cow?
I would say yes, but Martin, that's clearly a question for you.
And is there something about the dairy cow manure beyond just bulk carbon that might be of interest?
Well, I think what I was told is actually the dairy cattle manure, actually the quality of the organic carbon is much better in terms of, you know, very nice fatty acids, and so basically it would just be because of the type of carbon that your community would just have more available carbon than in poultry manure.
I noticed on your graphs that you express gene copies per unit of DNA per gram.
Yeah.
I guess I've never seen it
before.
Can you tell me a little
Well, yeah, no, I can actually. I've actually done that before, just to check if you know, like when you do an extraction of DNA, you normally have a variability across the success of your extraction. Huh? And I've always been a bit nervous about having, say, an effect of your amount of DNA. Yeah. But I've done that multiple times of looking at the data just per gram of soil or per incorporating also normalizing per amount of DNA. And actually, I could have presented it per gram of soil. I don't know why this time around I've decided to present it this way. It actually doesn't really change the trend at all.
No, but usually it's one way or the other, but your axis has...
Well, I just have the impression that, yeah, per gram, it's...
We
only weigh, anyway, it is the way we do, we extract from 1 gram, so it is anyway the same.
Yeah, and then you normalize for DNA because you're concerned about variation and efficiency.
But it doesn't really matter. You can even just use gram of soil and it's fine.
Yeah, this is something I actually worry about a lot. Some talks yesterday mentioned, I can't get my brain around that unit because it's a normalized and then normalized. But also, when you normalize to per gram DNA, it's a proportion of, essentially, even with the QPS, it's a proportion of the DNA that is that. But that means if the total amount of DNA goes up, the proportion can go down. Organisms don't care about their market share. They care about their biomass.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have to normalize, I think you mentioned this some yesterday, Peter. When you have to normalize to a proportion, you may be missing the story because it looks like it goes down just because someone else is just doing relatively better, but they're not doing worse. And so I think we need to be very, very careful anytime we proportion community partitioning or something or DNA. So
yeah, but as I said, if you...
The organisms themselves are doing.
Yeah, but if you... Actually, if I... Forget about the, course it would be 10 to the 7 and 10 to the 8 instead of being 10 to the 4. Yeah. But the trends are exactly the same. And that always bugged me because I don't understand why it should. I think what it means is actually when you do an extract, your variability is not that high. And then what's really more affecting the whole quantification is more about inhibitors, PCR inhibitors that you need to be more worried about. If nitrification plays, I'm not sure I understand the question. Sorry. Okay. If that, yes, it could be some. However, I think there's a lot of studies, the N15 studies that have shown actually that most of the time in winter it seems to be denitrifiers that are. Denitrification, that is the main process for nitrous oxide production. But and we have, like for the Quebec site also, we do have an accumulation of ammonium, which suggests that the nitrification is not very active.
I didn't hear the other talks, and I don't know if it came up before, but I just wonder, you know, with we're not going to change thaw cycles anytime soon, so are there prospective measures that can be taken from a management standpoint that look promising? Anybody looking at it? I mean, nitrification inhibitors or cover crops or lack of cover crops or tillage or no tillage or reducing rates of application, increasing rates of carbon or whatever?
Well, I think the goal of this is to look, okay, if we use tillage or no tillage, you know, what's the impact? And then, you know, we can basically... improve your agricultural management practices by changing, say, the rotation crop or changing the, you know, like application, the rate of application of your manure. I think that's the only thing. As to find an inhibitors for denitrification, I think it's not going to happen.
No, but
for nitrification, yes, but if denitrification is the main process in winter and we're still having a problem.
So you're saying there are...
No, except better agricultural practices.
Which ones?
Well, the tillage seems to be good. The best management practices as... you might not have been. Claudia Wagner-Riddle had described agricultural management practices that they are actually... they've studied quite extensively. And one of them was tillage and reduced tillage, Claudia, or no tillage at all. No-till, and there was actually with the no-till you get a significant reduction in nitrous oxide production over the winter. So there's
one of the times of the year where denitrification seems to be the main contributor, or fairly comfortable with that, is to maintain nitrate in the fall to very low levels. It does seem to have an impact on the foster and the dog or the tolerance. So, and I noticed even on yours that
this is an S3 soil biology section, right? So one of the ongoing great challenges is what are the links between community composition and flux? And I think we are in a great position to do that, right? Because we have a very interesting nitrous oxide flux. We're trying to sort out whether it's the genes or the physical conditions or do the genes change too slowly, right? So you might like to focus on this N2O reductase to infer this incomplete denitrification, or is it from nitrification? But do the genes change too slowly to do that? And should we be measuring the enzymes all, should we be trying to directly measure the levels of the enzymes or the activity of the enzymes? Because you have probably the best, really nice data through the winter on the presence of these genes, it just didn't seem to change. They don't seem to be dynamic enough.
No, not in the days we've done and not in the treatments we had, but I think obviously, for example, and one thing I forgot to mention is that, I'm presenting what we have so far, and this is the first year. So the grand plan is to have the abundance of the denitrifier, the abundance of the nitrifiers, the gene expression, and the diversity. So next year, I'll have all that. But because I think the thing also wanted to point out, and I completely forgot, is to say, okay, we don't see any changes in abundance, but that doesn't mean that there's a whole lot of changes in the composition of the denitrifiers. And you have denitrifiers that are more better producer of nitrous oxide. Yeah. So, or that have a higher denitrification rate. So that can affect the outcome. So I think that needs to be also looked at. As for enzyme, I would love to, like the DEA, we've done it, and actually the DEA says whatever it says. It says not much changes. I must admit that I'm not a fan of DEA. We always do it diligently, and in the end, it's the potential. So again, I guess what the data says is that the potential for denitrification is the same over time and over treatments. Oh, yes.
I think, as you say, the potential is high throughout. It's to what extent we're realizing that potential, and I think that's what's controlling the intervention.
Mm-hmm. I think we need stable isotope program.
Yeah.
Where do we put the isotope, right? Because then we would see who's doing it, and is that changing over time? But so do we put it in the nitrate, or do we put it in the ammonia?
Then you would see who's assimilating it, not who's actually denitrifying.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
No, but there's those O15 where you can have like the heavier DNA and you can go and get that too. That's possible.
Yeah, but it's a dissimilatory process.
Right.
So it's not you're not